Now we can see the blinking. Okay. Welcome to the Church of Mavis Radio Show. It's Friday night, 7:19 p.m. Central. Listen to United Public Radio. Does my mic sound okay? Does it sound all right? I had the craziest thing. I was with Agnost, and my mic would not work. It got updated, the old one, my gaming headset, so I was freaking out like, Jerry had to start the show by himself, and it was just weird and awkward. But luckily, we've dug this one up somewhere. It's just an old Logitech. I'm going to get something better, but at least it's working for now. But it was just crazy. My blood pressure went up. Like, the gaming one wouldn't work. The one I normally use stopped working. So let me see. Rosanna Shaw is supposed to be joining us. She's having some troubles connecting right now. Stephanie Quick is with us, and Wham.
Yeah.
How's it going, Stephanie? And your mic's on mute if you don't know, Stephanie. You probably know.
Well, now I know after you told me. I was getting roasted on a show recently, even by my own mom, for having a bad microphone discipline. So I was trying to do better, and obviously I'm no good at it still. Hi, everyone.
I use it all the time, too. Well, first off, Christina, I'm going to have Christina show y'all our pig.
Because we're talking about pets.
Yes, it's a mini pig.
Oh.
And her name's Elvira.
I've seen your pictures of this mini pig.
And she's very cute, but boy, is she a pain in the butt. Thank
God. That's because they're smart people.
They are. And she loves food. She just is a bottomless pit. And then she'll be quiet if I hold her like a baby. So I have to like lay everywhere with her. So she'll be.
Oh gosh, look at her. How cute. Nice. Oh my gosh, she's so tiny. Look at her. Oh my gosh.
Here you go.
Oh.
See how quiet she gets when she gets in my
arms. She just wanted her dad. That's so cute. Look at her little face. Oh, I can't take it. Oh, what a cutie.
This is why I cannot eat pork.
I know. It does put a thing on it. It does make it different.
I've known too many of these people in my life. I can't.
It makes it different for sure now. For sure. That's a rough one, though. Bacon. Come on, man. That's hard.
Yeah.
They just store with the long pork, right? Long pig.
I don't know if people eat mini pigs. I bet they do. That's sick. Mm-hmm. It's sick to do, but they're so smart. That's what's so sad about it.
I've never had much
interaction with one. And it's like they have such personality and so intelligent and everything, and loves music. Like, she'll be quiet to music. We're playing sea shanties, pirate songs from YouTube and stuff. Now she's being good.
Yeah. Hi, Christina.
Hi, Christina.
They're saying hi to you, Christina. And she's a constant eater for sure, that mini pig. Elvira, named after Elvira, Mistress of the Dark.
Mm-hmm. Mistress so dark.
Elvira has a book coming out in September, and we were trying to figure out a name, and we saw the book or whatever, and that's like Elvira. Her name was Jules. That's what the farmer named her or whatever. So it's Elvira now. Mm-hmm. But I don't really know. Hopefully we can figure out what's going on with Ferusha. StreamYard's kind of new to me, and we haven't really had any trouble in the past, but sometimes I had something with mics not too long ago. It was mostly because my mic updated. That's the only problem I've ever had, and it was acting weird. But well, it's good to be here, everybody. Pig's being quiet. Give it time, and it will not be. Oh, the dogs. One dog don't like it, I don't think. She keeps trying to pick at it. It's going to kick her butt. It's like fearless. That pig is fearless. But, well, Stephanie, good to have you here. And I guess we're going to start up on afterlife stories since, of course, I lost Jack not too long ago. And it sucked. It still does. And definitely, I guess, what have you found for us out there that you want to start with?
Well, I have a lot of different stories here. This is like a roasted for us, like rustling papers. Even my mom was listening to me. Why are you rustling papers? But I got some different stories from different people. And also a couple of just kind of general things. I got a story from Simon Heselager Johansson, who is with this organization called HID Denmark, which is a kind of an alternative, I don't want to say, tourism website. And so they have all these places in Denmark that have like interesting paranormal events or old standing stones or like fairy trees or hauntings. But he said that they have found that in Denmark, most of the ghost dogs that are seen by people are actually poodles. So I thought that was kind of an interesting, odd fact. Like, why would there be poodles in Denmark? I don't know. And then AP Strange on Twitter, Matt Hopewell, let me know that I guess Sir Francis Bacon, in 1626, he died of pneumonia. The story goes that he caught a chill stuffing a chicken with snow to prove that freezing temperature preserves the meat. He got pneumonia. The chicken also was deceased, and apparently that chicken is said to haunt Pond Square, where this happened, to this day. So I guess animals can have these very long afterlives of several hundred years. But yeah, I was, you know, I felt so bad when Jack passed, because, you know, everyone has their pets and you become, you know, very intimate and very close with them. And I've definitely had, just even personally, a lot of experiences of animals after they pass. The Boosh was my cat I had for like over 17 years recently. We were like super close. I wrote about him on my blog, The Cat with Faculty X. He was a real character, and I had some very strong synchronicities right before he died. I think I was talking about this last time I was on there a little bit, because he came to us from another house. He decided to move into our place because he got a lot better food, mostly, I think. But so we always call him the Boosh, but his original name was King, after Elvis. And so before he was getting old, but there was nothing really wrong with him. And I started to see, like, there was a panel truck near here that had graffiti. It said King with a crown. And there's a bird called a kinglet, ruby crown kinglet, that when I first started bird watching, I'm a bird watcher, I saw a lot of them flashing their red crowns. And ever since then, I'd always been looking for it, but I was never in the area where the males would be displaying. That's part of their mating and territorial display. And then right before he died, like about 2 or 3 weeks, there was a kinglet came, and I was just sitting there at the kitchen, like the breakfast table, and it came, and I didn't even have to turn my head. This bird was just there and started flashing its crown, which is the first time I've seen it in like over 20 years. And I was like, oh no, this is the king bird. So anyway, so then the Boosh died, but after that, I felt his presence very strongly. I would feel him, jumping on the bed. This is like a classic thing that many, many people report. Felt his presence. And I, one time after several months, my husband Anthony felt him jump on the bed one night in the middle of the night. And it's a pretty classic thing. There's a really nice article by Susan Demeter on her blog called Out of My Mind's Eye on Ghost Cats. And she talks about an incident that she had with a cat. She has cats, but this is a cat that was in a house she had moved into. And the ghost cat came with the house. And it was interesting. She talks about how she thought they were moving in. It's like her and her companion at the time and her daughter, who was on the younger side. And it was like a 1920s type house. She's in there one day, and all of a sudden she sees this cat, and it just looks like a regular cat. She's like, how did a cat get in here? You know, sometimes when you first move in someplace, the neighbor's cats can get in and stuff. But then she checked, and it had obviously vanished and was an insubstantial cat. So she's like, well, whatever. Not really deciding one way or the other about it. But then her companion also, you know, a few days later said, I saw this cat around here. And then after that, they still didn't say anything to her daughter, but her daughter, she noticed, would be talking to or kind of interacting with the ghost cat. So she figured, yeah, for whatever reason, this cat is here as a ghost and hanging out. So she says that most people will see, like, a classic apparition as looks like a solid animate animal. It blocks the light, it blocks what's behind it, and then people have no reason to think it's not a normal living cat in a body until something happens and it vanishes. You also get a lot of the feeling of, you know, people, you know, like you're on a bed, you're on the chair, you feel like a cat jump up on the bed or onto your lap or that type of a thing. But it's nice if people want to go over there, Out of My Mind's Eye, Susan Demeter's blog, and it's just called Ghost Cats. But the nice thing is that she has several references at the end for different books that you can get if you're really interested in learning about companion animals who become ghosts and seeing a lot of that stuff.
Cool. I've heard different things about that. I've heard people say that dogs are pets or whatever. No, I don't like the word pet, but dogs are sinless and they go back to the source, of which, you know, they're like pretty much God energy. And I've had someone else tell me they get a new body and he'll speak in binary to me. I don't know what the heck that was about, but I've heard all kinds of different stuff. He's a dog man now, and he's going to visit me in a UFO. So that's... They didn't say the Dogman UFO thing. I just added that. But they did say a new body and it's going to speak in binary or whatever. So that would be weird. But I have seen weird things out of the corner of my eye, like it, that could have been him. Like where you see a white shape move and it's under the bed and it's nothing there at all. But you saw something. I saw something go under the car like that and there was nothing there. It's almost like I think it was him. And maybe just showing me he's okay. I've seen him smile in my head because he used to smile. And sometimes when I've been sad about him, I'll see him or think of him, and then I'll think of him smiling. Like it's kind of like a, I don't know, telepathic or just weird, like an image in my head of him smiling. So I've had that happen a lot. It's just, you know, the Rainbow Bridge, I've heard that story. That there's some other story that I saw, some native thing on a meme that when you die, all your... all the animals will meet you on this bridge and they decide if you get to cross over. That was kind of interesting.
That's from Persia. That's a Zoroastrian thing. And it's not all the in original Zoroastrianism, it isn't all the animals. It's a dog, very specifically, because dogs are sacred in Zoroastrianism. They can see spirits. So there's this thing called the Chinbot Bridge. And when you die, you cross this bridge and you're met by a dog. And if you pass the dog, then you're met by three aspects of your spirit. And if you pass all of those, then you go to whatever is beyond that.
Cool. So that's, I know that the particular one I saw said native something, but I know they share different things, but it was something on Facebook. So I don't know if it's, you know, what's true and what on Facebook, but that sounds kind of like it for sure. Similar stories. I know different cultures share similar kind of beliefs and stuff, but I'd have to find it on my Facebook. I don't remember which tribe or whatever. It's just one of those freaking memes. Those memes, the memeage. But I'll have to look up the Zoroastrian one for sure. That sounds cool, too. If Jack's in charge of the bridge, then I'm in. Yeah.
Well, you know, if you want to, there's this. Remember when we did the interview with Stephen Flowers?
Yes.
He has a book called Original Magic, in which he provides sort of an overview of Zoroastrian religion and beliefs. And he talks about this in that book. So you might want to get it. It's called Original Magic. It's actually a very good introduction to sort of practical Zoroastrianism, because you can't convert to Zoroastrianism anymore, but you can become a Mazdian, which is sort of like a non-Zoroastrian. but you need to have an introduction to it, and it's a very cool tradition because animals play a really important role in this tradition. The god or the Spenta Vohumanu is like which means like the good mind, is where we get the image of the archangel Gabriel. He's like the guardian of all animals, and there's this whole sort of mythology about how the bull and the cow maintain the body and the soul of all animals. Animals are assumed to have souls. It's a great tradition.
Here's that meme. It says in India, it doesn't say the tribe, and I don't know if it means native or like Indians, you know, overseas or whatever. An Indian legend says when a human dies, there is a bridge that they must cross to enter into heaven. At the head of the bridge waits every animal that human encounter during their lifetime. The animals, based on what they know of this person, decide which humans may cross the bridge and which are turned away. That would be karma at its finest. It's one of those sun-gazing memes, so I don't know where they got it from, but I saw it. Sun-gazing. One of those hippie memes. hippie new age groups. But
to respond to what Stephanie was saying, I had an incredible, I lived in this haunted house. It was one of the last houses I lived in Kansas City, Missouri. And I lived in this haunted house. It had several other things going on in it, but one of the things it had in it was a ghost animal. And what made it really clear that there was a ghost animal is I had two cats at the time, and they would play with it. And I couldn't see it, but I noticed that they would like play like two cats with something, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden it would like disappear for them. I couldn't see it, but they could see it. And then they would be really confused. But when I had my own bathroom in this apartment, and there were many, many times when I would always close the doors to keep my cats from coming in, because they were the kinds of cats that would do this manic thing. And when you were sleeping, they'd like run across your face and stuff and wake you up. You know, like one time my cats had a fight like on my face, and one of them punched me in the face and gave me like a black eye. I mean, seriously. So I kept them like shut out of the room. So one time I was in the bathroom and I was sitting on the toilet, and I felt this brushing up against my leg, just like a cat.
Yep.
Without even thinking, because I have cats, I reached down to pet it and there was nothing there. And that happened several times. So I know that whatever it was a ghost cat.
That is wild. That's classic. Yeah.
Christina had that happen in the kitchen after Jack died. And he always used to wait for food, for leftovers, and then she felt something on her leg. So it's weird. And then you wonder, do they go back and forth? Like, can they just like pop here and then go back to wherever? Or are they like here forever until you croak? And then you know, it's just weird. I started thinking about all that. Like, is there a portal he can go hang out with his dog friends and just reappear here or what? It's almost like he's a little dog alien now. And that was his real form or something. It's weird, but a lot to think about.
This wasn't a cat I knew. It was a cat that was part of this house. I mean, this house, there were several different apparitions that appeared in this house, and including one, a number of humans. I never actually saw anything, but one of my roommates did, but I heard stuff. There was poltergeist activity that occurred in it and stuff, and so I heard stuff, but I didn't actually see anything. But the cat was part of it, so it came with the house. It wasn't one of my cats. I've had my own ghost experiences with Mr. Lou.
Mr. Lou.
the best cat, the best cat in the house is what I called it, Mr. Lou. And he still pops in. He was a cat. He was only a cat in human. I mean, it was, how do I put this? He was more than a cat, but he was something else in cat form. That's what he was. Nice. He was some kind of an ascended soul. He had an amazing, amazing capacity. And he still pops in. He pops in not only to me, but he pops into several friends of mine. So
he's a cat alien.
He's a cat alien.
It's strange how you get these like very strong impressions, because part of the thing that struck me about the Bush when he was alive, but then even much more so after he died, was that he had this very strong mission to increase communication and cooperation between cats and humanity. Which, I mean, when you think about it, if you you have like dogs or cats, how do they get domesticated? Like, they started getting in good with humans because they got a cushier deal living with humans. So it makes sense that to some of them, that this would kind of be their mission. But it was like so strange to have that kind of feeling about it. And then, and to feel like he was really trying very strongly to communicate that idea to me, that I needed, just because he had died, that I needed to still work on furthering the communication and alliance between humans and cats. And I guess right now I'm doing that. But, but the other thing is my mom has had a number of dogs over the years. And one of her dogs, Jack, he died a couple years ago. We got really close. He's a Cairn Terrier, super cute, huge personality, very protective of my mom. But he just had, I always said, if there's any dog that is going to be reincarnated as a human next life, I would feel like it was Jack, because I just feel like he had this real drive, this yearning to become human. And Robert Monroe, who the out of body guy, Journeys Out of the Body,
yeah,
he was really into animals and communication with animals, and furthering communication and cooperation between people and animals. He had a number of experiences involving his dog Steamboat, which I think is such a cute name for a dog. It was just like kind of this white fluffy dog. He had one experience where he was kind of in like the waiting room for people that are going to get reincarnated, and most people seem very unaware of what's going on, and they're just kind of going for another ride on the roller coaster, as it were. And he's looking around, it's very chaotic, but he sees like this kind of small, very soft presence in a corner. And he goes and he's talking to this person, and he figures that it's like either a dog or a cat that is going to be reincarnated as a human for the first time. And talking about how different their presence was in their spirit. At the same time, it's like this weird idea that, you know, you can have it doesn't have to be strictly, you know, you're human, you stay human or whatever, that you can have these kind of evolutions of the soul coming into different bodies. But he also did a lot of work with training people to become psychopomps, right? Those who facilitate the journey between death, or, you know, the living or person, or the person who has died, and the underworld. Someone who can take you down there, get you where you need to go. And so he trained up a lot of people so you could astrally or travel out of the body to, you know, you could go and check out, see if there's anyone kind of at a loose end, and then get that person to certain locations in the astral plane, or as he would call them, focuses, these kind of subtle locations. There's one called the Park, which is just kind of like a hub, this gorgeous area where anyone could go who has died, and then they'll find whoever they need to be with, at, you know, for their next stage of whatever they're going to do after they die. But so he trained up a lot of living people, humans in the body, to do this type of work using his audio technologies, meditations and stuff. But then they found that they accumulated certain people who were deceased who would help them in these projects. And one of the people that was deceased was a small white dog. People would be like trying to find someone who was dead and get them to move on, and this dog would show up to help. Be like barking like Lassie saying, come over here, or whatever. So it's interesting, and I think that there is, you know, through many cultures throughout the world, there's always this association of dogs with the underworld and guarding the underworld. So
yeah, very much. That's very interesting. You know, I've been doing a lot of work with I don't know why I'm embarrassed to say this, but I've been doing a lot of work with some goddess figures. And one of the interesting things about them, and they're all connected to Venus in one way or another, and one of the interesting things about them is how they are connected to different animals. So like Aphrodite is connected to dolphins and to, you know, sea creatures. And one of the goddesses is Sekhmet. She's more than just a Venus goddess. She's a lot of other things. But, of course, she's connected to the lioness, and a very specific kind of lioness. It's a lioness. It's the Asian lion, which is an extinct form of the lion. You know, we think of the African lion. Mm-hmm. But there was another lion that was called which was the Asian lion. And the Asian lion, the lionesses had manes. They had small manes. And she's connected to that particular kind, that particular lioness. So in coming into contact with these different goddess figures, I've had to become aware of the different animals that they're connected with. Like Freya, who I've always been connected to, is of course connected to cats, but she's also connected to other animals as well, you know, in the deeper tradition. So to me, it's really interesting that gods and goddess figures are often connected to animals as sort of like extensions of their power, if you will.
Yeah.
Like Odin to that to wolves and to ravens, and although actually Freya is connected to ravens too, and then there's Ragana, who is a very deep Baltic sea goddess who's connected to owls.
Mm-hmm.
And of course Athena is connected to owls. So, you know, just all of these different animals. I've come to think that most of my spirituality revolves around animals.
Yeah.
Even more than God forms or God or goddesses, but animals.
Yeah.
You know, sort of like expressions of these powers. It's really interesting. I find it fascinating.
Is Freya the same as Freyja? Like, is that the same person? Because I know the Freyja, which is probably the same person, but I know she has a battle boar connection. I read that recently about she had a boar. But is that the same thing that you're talking about? Freyja?
Well, yeah. I mean, she's connected to the Vanir. The Vanadis, which is one of the, I guess you would say, one of the families of gods in the Scandinavian pantheon. And she is connected to the boar, but what that connects her to her brother, Freyr, who is more connected to the boar than she is. But her own personal, kind of like her familiar, if you will, is a cat. Mm-hmm. is the European wildcat. There's a native European wildcat that's smaller than our bobcat.
Yeah.
And it still exists in certain parts of Europe and in Scotland, and it's that's sort of her native cat. But she's also connected to swans and to certain other birds of prey. But her connection to the boar has to do with her connection to the Vanir and her brother, who is connected to the boar. He actually rides the boar. That's Freyr.
Cool.
And this is part of like an older, when we think of Scandinavian or Germanic mythology, we think of Odin and Thor and, you know, all those dudes from the Marvel universe. But according to the oldest traditions, the original gods of the Germanic Scandinavian people were not Odin and Thor. They were the Vanir, and that was Freyr and Freya and a series of other deities that are connected specifically to the earth. And they all have very particular animal connections.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, so does Odin, obviously. I mean, you know, he's connected to, you know, the wolf and the bear and to ravens and Thor. Well, Thor is connected in an interesting way to goats.
Goats.
Goats and pigs. Goats and pigs.
Goats and pigs for Thor.
Yeah, goats and pigs for Thor. You know, he has this wonderful cauldron, kind of like the Dagda in Celtic mythology, where this cauldron where he can throw stuff into it, cook stuff, and stuff never ceases to come out of it.
Oh,
you know,
that's good. It's interesting because as far as you're talking about spirituality being connected with animals. Yeah, I find that's very powerful as well, because it connects you to, you know, the real world around you, and you can observe the animal's behavior, you can observe the ecology, the various environments, what's happening with the weather and the climate all around you, and this helps to ground you. But recently I was talking with someone about a teacher of mine who was of a Native North American tradition, and she would talk about animal medicine, animal magic, and she would say, she's kind of hardcore, but she would say, you know, you could, if you have an animal that's showing up a lot for you, then one of the things you could do to kind of meditate or learn about it is you kind of start at the top of the animal and go all the way down through its body and just see whatever you notice and kind of tease out whatever you can in a magical, divinatory, spiritual, practical as well meaning about that animal. For example, if you look at the owls, let's say, right, you look at their eyes, the kind of satellite dish there, the way that their ears are hypersensitive, and you know, that, what does that say about their sensory organs, how they organize their experience, and you know, what does this tell you about what owl medicine could help you with, right?
Right.
What types of, so, and you could just go through all the different aspects of the, even just the physical body of the animal. And then of course you would want to look at, you know, where does it live? What does it eat? How does it find, you know, what it needs to eat? What's the mating practices like? What is it, how does it care for its young? How does that go on? I mean, there's just all these things that you can do to learn about these animals, but then you, if you look at it from the spiritual angle, or the metaphysical angle as well, you can get a lot of insight, and it can be very interesting if you're trying to develop your skills at divination as well, I found. So,
right.
But there's the, as far as dogs in the underworld, of course, the two big ones would be Hecate and Diana, both being associated with dogs from the dog lady aspect of things. So,
well, and then there's Anubis, of course.
Yes, the big daddy.
a big daddy Anubis.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna lay your soul against this feather.
This teeny little feather over here.
And this feather. Yeah. I think what's interesting about animals is that in many ways, and if you look at these mythological systems, they represent aspects of ourselves that we've kind of forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
We've kind of neglected. And, you know, animals often have qualities that we don't have. You know, they can hear better, they can see better in some cases, they have better senses. I mean, frankly, sometimes I think the only thing humans have is our ability to create technology to augment our senses that we've lost, but animals have them.
Yeah.
You know, and on some level we know that. And to me, what's really valuable a lot about these ancient systems, and you mentioned the indigenous systems, is this understanding that animals are family. They are part of our larger family. And to really understand ourselves, you have to connect with them, you know, intimately on some level. And they are, to me, when I connect with animals, I realize that humans are not aliens, that we are part of this planet.
Yes.
And it's humans that, it's animals that remind me of that. It's, you know, otherwise I feel like I'm kind of a Cylon, mm-hmm. You know, and animals help me. I think I've learned more from animals than I've ever learned from a human being about how to live and how to be just normal.
Mm-hmm. No, I think, you know, animals, I mean, they always say it, but they're very grounded. I mean, I don't know how many people have had, you know, just myself, women that are close to me that have had, like, you know, chronic illness or pain, that type of thing. And, you know, it can be very difficult to get your behind up and moving around, but if you have, you know, the dog that needs a walk, or the cat is, you know, jumping on your face because you got to go feed it, these are that keeps you on a schedule, and it keeps you connected and brings you outside of yourself, and which is incredibly valuable. And it's also just, you know, very grounded and very, you know, practical. It's like, well, okay, we got to take care of these practicalities, which could be very difficult to lose track of when you're, you know, when hard situation, or, you know, people that have been grief stricken.
Right.
You know?
Well, and I think what's interesting about animals is, I don't know about other people. I mean, I, you know, I might gripe if a cat asks me for food all the time, But the truth is that on a deep level, I don't resent that. For some, if a human being was doing that, I would resent it. But for some reason, I don't resent a cat or a dog asking me that.
Yeah.
I think we love them in a different way than we love. Yeah. And it's because they love us in a different way.
Yep.
Than other humans love us. I don't know. I mean, maybe other people have different experiences, but you know, I would do more for an animal than I would do for a person. Or I put up with more, I guess, is probably a better way of putting it. I don't know. It's probably really rude, but you know.
I think a lot of people have that type of thing because it's just something very, they're very largely in the moment and they're much more honest with you than a lot of people can be, and you know, much more just kind of more free with letting you know what's in their heart, you know, for good or ill.
Or they're even honest about their manipulations.
Exactly.
There's nothing passive aggressive about it. I like when my cat, when the cat that lives here, I can't say she's my cat. She lives here. She's not my cat.
Yeah.
She, in fact, Alan is her human, but I'm the one that feeds her, so I'm the one that gets pulled into her drama.
Her scenarios.
Her scenarios. But, she's not passive aggressive at all. It's just very direct. I want food. I want pets. I want out. I want this. I want that. And you know what? I don't know. If it was a human, I'd be like, screw you. Let yourself out, right? But because it's a cat, I'm like, okay, I will interrupt this Zoom meeting. I will interrupt this business Zoom meeting. I will tell my Zoom compatriots that I have to let the cat out. And what's funny is everybody gets it.
That's the thing. Everyone's like, okay, you gotta let the cat out.
That's the funny thing. It's like, this is a professional meeting, a professional training, and I'm like, I have to let the cat out. And they're like, okay. Everybody gets it. It's so
what weird. Can you do? It's oh, so that is funny.
There's a lot of cats out here. We feed them, and sometimes they bite on the front porch. Like the whole neighborhood, like there's a million cats out there that aren't ours, but we just give them food. Like we buy food for them, and it helps them at least, but it definitely makes the dogs go nuts when they fight out there over food, whatever they're doing at the food bowl. I'm sure they're doing something, fighting
over
or something.
Funny, when I was growing up, we had we were in this like a suburban ranch house in Castro Valley, and my mom and dad had like a stall shower in their bathroom, and it had like a small, it was like maybe like 1.5 by 1 or 2 feet square little window in the shower.
Mm-hmm.
And this is like in the 70s. And so the side yard there, I don't know, the neighborhood cats used to get in there and start scrapping or loving or whatever, and it was making this unholy racket. My mom would go in there and she could just kind of turn the shower head so it would point out the window, and she'd spray the cats that way through the window when she made too much noise. I don't know why they're always cracking me up. It's like, yeah, I had to spray the cats last night. Then we also had a peacock a couple of blocks away, and there was, I don't know who had it, but it would start screaming, and you know, they sound like some, like a woman being attacked or some awful thing. So whenever someone new would move in the neighborhood, you could tell when they had finally heard the peacock one night, they'd be all alarmed in the neighborhood going around. But that was those, I don't know. Cats can be, they could be so terrible, but then, you know, you just want to accommodate them anyway. I don't know what it is. Anyway, so that would be cat magic for you.
Yeah, I don't know what it is about cats, because I mean, that's the thing about dogs. Dogs are sweeter. They're just sweeter people, even though cats can be very sweet. Dogs are sweeter people, just generally.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with that. But there's something about me, it's probably a sadomasochistic thing, that the fact that cats are buttholes really attracts me, you know? And I don't know what that is, but I mean, I love all cats. You want to know what my fantasy is? This is not a sexual fantasy. This is a love fantasy. My fantasy is to be in a room with all the kittens and have them on me, all the kittens, and I don't care if they poop on me. I don't care what they do. I just want all the kittens. And that's the closest I am to being maternal.
Yeah.
Just to have all the kittens.
Yeah. Well, they're so fun. And
they're butt heads.
Yeah. But they also have amazing physical capabilities too, as far as the way they can just, you know, just kind of take off from a standing jump and get, you know, several feet up in the air on the counter and all that type of stuff. So
it's that little mouth. When that little mouth goes, meh, 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 mouth. It's like it kills me. I'm just dead. I will lay down on the floor. I'm dead. I don't know why. It's so weird, you know. But you know, little tiny puppies are really cute too. You know, when their little faces and they're wagging so hard that their whole butt, like they,
oh yeah,
over, when they're wagging their tails so hard that they fall over, that's really cute.
It's true. I don't know. I think that's part of the theory of that when cats and dogs got domesticated, like they keep more of their cute young features because it kind of trips our own, you know, maternal or paternal instincts. So they kind of get in on that too. It's like they're hitting us every which way.
I found a few dog quotes. I'll read a couple. Here's one from Johnny Depp. The only creatures that are evolved enough to convey pure love are dogs and infants, which, I mean, that's true, I'm sure. Here's His Dog by Aldous Huxley. This is kind of a weird one. To his dog, every man is Napoleon, hence the constant popularity of dogs. So I don't know if you want to be Napoleon to your dog. But Bob Barker, a person who has never owned a dog, has missed a wonderful part of life. That's a dude from Price is Right, right? Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I mean, if I had the space, I would have all the animals. Because, you know, the other thing that I really love, I love birds, little birds. Mm-hmm. And I especially love birds with their little fluffies on the back. I belong to this Facebook group called, it's a stupid group. It's called I can't even remember what it's called, but it's humans who are imagining what their birds are saying.
Oh, yeah.
It is. And it is like the sweetest group ever, because all they do is they show pictures of their pet birds, you know, and they can be any birds, you know, hens or chickens or cockatiels or parrots or whatever. And then they imagine what their birds are saying. And there's evolved this whole language, like, it's Mumther and Father and Friends. Yeah. It's hilarious. It's hilarious, you know. But the best thing is the burbs themselves. Their little feet are called peats, and then their little puffy things on the top of their legs are called fluffies. and they take videos of their birds just being birds, and their birds are so funny. You know, because if anybody's ever had like a cockatiel or a parrot or a budgie or, you know, anything like that, they know that these birds are just precious, and they're very social. And I mean, I've known birds. I've never had one, but I had a friend who had a bird. She would get on your hand and she'd hop up to your shoulder, and she liked my hair, you know,
yep.
So she'd get in my hair like this. And then she'd hop on my head, and then she'd get down in my glasses, and she'd just kiss me all of my, and I just loved her. Her name was like Twitch or something. It was hilarious. And, you know, I mean, she could have cracked on my head, and it would have been fine.
That is funny.
But I love burbs. I just really do. And I love chickens. I think chickens are the most. Our neighbors across the road have just gotten a new flock of chickens.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And roosters. So the rooster crows every day. I'm sure it drives the neighbors nuts. But this morning, all the chickens were out, and they were all over the place, and they were just doing their whole kind of... They came in the yard. They were just, like, checking things out. You know how chickens are. And I just want to grab them and kiss them on the head. I don't know why. It's so weird. I just love chickens. Anyway, yeah, I'm nuts. I'm a crazy animal person.
We saw a chicken running around McDonald's not too long ago or something. Uh-oh. Like we were at the drive-in and a chicken just comes through. It's like, what the hell? It's kind of disturbing. here's a quote, Will Rogers: "If there are no dogs in heaven, then when I die, I want to go where they went."
Exactly.
I think a lot of people, I think that is a very popular and sound opinion out there. That's my viewpoint on it.
Yeah.
I used to be a bird specialist when I worked at Petco, and I don't know how the hell that happened. Somehow, I think they just needed one, and I was it. Mm-hmm. I don't remember a damn thing about taking care of birds, but the basics now, but I was like the bird specialist at Petco. And I had cockatiels and all those. There's so many different ones. Parrots and African gray parrots and stuff. Now I'm remembering a water dragon jumping out of the cage and landing on my bald head. Like it jumped out, one of those lizards that call water dragons, jumped out of the cage. I screamed. It's like, ah! When I took care of the reptiles there.
I was in high school. I had a friend who had a snake, a pet snake. I have to admit, I like reptiles too. Because they're so honest. There's no thought there. They either like you or they don't like you, or they like something and they don't. I get that. But this one, the snake liked me, and it would crawl up it would come out here, and I would show it like my. It would nestle right here in my bra, and it would stick its face like right out here like this, and it would just. Because it's warm right there, right?
Yeah, that's why, yeah. Yeah.
It'd stick its face out, and I'd just walk around with it to the snake, like in my
floor. Oh, God.
You know? But, no, I like reptiles, too. So, you know, any of them, you know, I would just have a zoo in my house if I could afford it. Just a zoo.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would. I like hedgehogs too, although I guess they're kind of horrible to keep. I mean, it's because I guess they're insectivores and they're nocturnal and they get cranky and they don't really want you bothering them or looking at them or holding them unless you really have one with a good disposition and you know make a lot of effort towards making it comfortable around you. But I don't know. I was cracking up. I saw this. It was a small video that was on the net, and I sent it to some people, but this guy is holding a hedgehog. He's, I don't know, like in Australia or something. Anyway, not that that matters. He's holding this hedgehog and he's kind of puts it up next to his face, and the hedgehog just like bites the living heck out of his hand, like really bad. And it's so funny because, you know, they have that long snout and it's just like really like twists on there. But I was like, you know, all respect to this guy, because I was thinking, oh gosh, would he drop it, which would be very dangerous for the hedgehog, but no, he just kept holding it very gently and walked away. But I'd love to have one because I love it. Like you say, it's just something about them that's like so straightforward. And I guess they like to exercise at night on their wheels. They have like a hamster wheel, but it's a hedgehog wheel. And I guess it's disgusting because they start exercising, so I guess their digestive system goes to the stomach. They poop and it's raising its and they eat all these bugs, so it's like, it's not even like rabbit poop, which is kind of okay. It's just like this like rancid bug poop all sprayed all over the place. They get it on their feet.
This is very spiritual.
But then people are like, they love their hedgehogs, and they're like, well, you just gotta, you know, take care of them, even though they have all these special requirements. You gotta bathe them every day and stuff.
A pet dung beetle.
That'd be pretty interesting.
I was looking, Wham, this is kind of off the subject a little, but I already Six Killer Clark's books, because I was just seeing if she had anything new come out, and she doesn't, but I saw this just now. It just kind of shocked me. Encounters with Star People, Untold Stories of American Indians on Amazon. The paperback is $280 now. The hardcover is $190 now. What the hell? You have that book? I know I have it somewhere.
No, I do, but that means that people are reselling it. That's what they're reselling it for. That. But yeah, she published a book back in I guess it was the late, early summer of 2019.
I have that one. I have it. Yeah. I was just sure you can't buy it for this this book, the Encounters with Star People, just for a normal price anymore. It's crazy.
I guess not. I guess not.
I didn't even know there was a hardcover, but just the paperback's $279. I have that at my mom's. Need to dig that one out and make sure it's okay for sure. Yeah,
exactly.
That's nuts. That's very nuts. So, Stephanie, what's been going on paranormal wise? What have you come across anything interesting, any stories or anything you've been working on? Or?
Well, I do have one more report that I think is a little bit long, but it's pretty interesting because it kind of has a lot of unusual aspects as far as survival and purpose and possible reincarnation. So I don't know if you want to hear that from another ghost cat angle.
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
Yeah, I thought this one was pretty interesting. It's from Barbara A. Fisher. She hosts the 6 Degrees of John Keel podcast, which is excellent. But she talks about they had adopted a very young cat, just kind of maybe a little bit of an advanced kitten stage. And this was like in the mid-1990s, and they named her Eleanor. And this cat right away had a big a bond with her husband, Zach, kind of reached out and grabbed him and ran up on his shoulders like right away, I think even before they were brought Eleanor home. And she, you know, would just kind of like to, you know, how they sometimes will kind of perch kind of around your neck on your shoulders like that. I guess she liked to do that with him all the time. They really love this cat, but it turned out that after a few months, she started to get sickly, and she had something called fatty liver syndrome, which back then, I guess they could not treat. Nowadays, they can. So basically, it was a thing where the cat was just kind of slowly not able to take on nutrition, so kind of starving. So it came to be her time. And she said that the morning dawned, and we took her to the vet for her last ride. There was snow on the ground with yellow sunlight and a blue, blue sky. She was a pure white cat with one yellow eye and one blue one, with a smudge of a spot on her forehead where the third eye was, like a sooty fingerprint. So they had to let her go. But there was this kind of beautiful sign of the day looking just like she did with her two eyes. And I guess that night, Zach became really ill, and you know, they were both crying because they were so upset that they had this wonderful Eleanor and had to let her go so quickly. I guess his last words to Eleanor were that he wanted her to come back in a stronger body, and he would know when he saw her. So he's like, let's meet up again. But I guess they were in bed that night, and I said, we were both very upset. So we felt a little weight land on the foot of the bed and looked up and saw a ball of white light there. We felt paws patter up the bed, and the light moved with them. It came up to Zach's pillow where Eleanor used to sleep by his head and rested there, and he felt a little warm body. So this is real typical, you know, the visitation after the death. So about 4 years later, they found a black cat in Providence, Rhode Island, a little black cat with a white crescent moon marking on her belly. And when we go meet her, she crawls up Zach's shoulder just like Eleanor did. So they named her Minnaloosh. She rides around on Zach's shoulders, sleeps curled against his belly or on his pillow, and loves to hear him play guitar or flute. She stays with us 8 years, then is struck down by feline infectious peritonitis and passes. And she says she haunts their house to this day. She says, I see her now and again, a little ball of black light or shadow scooting along and dancing up and down the stairs in the hallway. She hangs out in one of my art studios. Now this part, it's pretty interesting so far with the whole idea of cat reincarnation, but here is that after she has passed, she guided several stray cats to our house. One, a little orange cat named Jane, showed up under my car, and there was with her a black cat that had a white shining star in her forehead, like Eleanor's smudge, like reversed. But that cat disappeared in front of my eyes after I coaxed Jane into the house. Yep. She also guided Gigi, our little male black cat who came as a feral kitten to our house with no sign of siblings or mother, a tiny kitten just newly able to eat solids. So
what
she
is that
has
noise?
I don't know.
Did you just hear a man talk like weird? I heard something. Yeah. No, it wasn't. It wasn't me.
I just heard something weird myself. I have no idea.
It was like, it wasn't me. It was no one here. I don't know.
It was like we were connecting with some kind of weird porn thing.
And I was like, oh. I said, like, what in the world was that, bro? That wasn't me. I heard it though.
It's terrible because oh my gosh. Well, anyway, so the porn thing may be a little fast forward to what's been happening with me paranormally. But I wanted to say I thought that this the first. I thought that was such a great story about how you know, this reincarnation of the cat. Ghost cat, and then also this cat is, you know, you'll see these kind of memes come up sometimes, or people will talk about it, where you have animals like dogs or cats, and they'll, like, if they find a stray dog or cat, they'll bring them over so that, you know, people can take care of them. And I thought that was just kind of a really cool kind of through line there with this one animal spirit and all these various ideas about that. So but that's, Barbara Fisher, and I appreciate her writing up that story because it has a lot to say about, like you're saying, where do they go and how do we meet up with them and what do they do? So
that's just it. And you worry that the one, you know, Jack, what if he has to come back as a dog and he's like with someone that's a jerk or something? Hopefully that don't happen, but you and then that lady, June, the dog just made a noise. That what a dog didn't make a noise a while ago, did it? No, that was something weird. A bulldog just made a noise. That wasn't the noise we heard was like, yeah. Now the blood sugar sex magic.
Well, here's the thing. I don't know why. Starting, I don't know, probably about the beginning part of this month, maybe a little before, as far as I can tell, I have been beset with getting a lot of people sending me Bigfoot erotica, Bigfoot erotic memorabilia. Sliding into my DMs with a picture of a Bigfoot in an aroused, a male Bigfoot in an aroused state.
I know there's a lady that writes those kind of
male books. Or female in an aroused state.
Male.
I know there's a lady that makes money off those erotica Bigfoot books. She used to. I don't know if she sells them anymore, but I can't even say the title was COME for Bigfoot. So I'll just say that. But I know that lady's like making 30 grand a month or something. I don't know if she still does it or whatever, but I know they always are rocking those Bigfoot boobies with that one. I see statues of Bigfoot and the one with the boobies. I guess that was the Patterson Gimlin or whatever. And you don't normally see a Bigfoot suit that has boobies. That's kind of rare, so that's why I don't know what I think about that. Because I've never seen a Bigfoot suit with boobies.
Yeah, Bigfoot, so. I got this is like the type of stuff that's been showing up in my DMs is Alex Bolin of John and Alex Hate Stuff sent me a DM of there is. I don't even know how to describe this. It's like a large metal sculpture of a kind of aggravated looking Bigfoot, but it has like two slides coming out of it. Like if you would go up inside the Bigfoot and then come out into these two slides, like kitty slides, but the slides are coming out of the Bigfoot where the nipples would be.
It's for kids. Bigfoot slide nipples.
What?
Is it like a playground for children? Where's that at?
I don't know. It was just something flying around all of a sudden. Well, and the funny thing is too is that my husband, Anthony, he doesn't like any of this paranormal stuff. He's always ribbing me about it. He's not a Bigfoot person. He ended up buying a book last weekend at a bookstore, and it's just about missing people, right? And people that are missing in the wilderness and that whole thing. And he's like, oh, look on the back. It says it has something by the world's foremost Bigfoot researcher. I'm like, what? You bought a book that had something to do about Bigfoot? Was very unusual.
Was it missing 411?
They were talking about how, yeah, it was. Well, it was talking about how David Paulides had been somewhat involved in this one missing persons case. It's called The Cold Vanish by a guy named Hillman, I think, or Billman, rather. Case in 2017, I think, up in the Pacific Northwest. Yeah. But then Anthony went and got his hair cut today, and he came home. And I guess his hairstylist, for some reason, was telling him about how his family was back in Nebraska in a cornfield. I don't know if they were hunting or what, but they're in this cornfield, and they look out and they see a Bigfoot is in this cornfield, and it looks at them and then just like starts walking away. And this whole family was like completely freaking out because it was cause they saw a Bigfoot in a cornfield, and then. And then Bigfoot saw them.
Bigfoot sighting in a cornfield.
Yes. Yes. So it's like been this huge big. I mean, partly it's just ridiculous stuff. But I had no idea that there was quite so many depictions of a Bigfoot's erotic side. Let's say out there.
I've heard some stuff about. I've heard one particular story about a Bigfoot and a horse. I won't repeat it, but a long time ago, I forget who that was. But
well, this is my problem because I'm going to this is kind of like all this sexy Sasquatch stuff, and in a few weeks, I'm going to be heading up to a remote cabin in the heart of Bigfoot country, and I really don't want to have any encounters. I don't know. Yeah. I don't like where this is going headed.
They're a rogue Bigfoot. Mm-hmm. They might eat you. I don't think they all do that, but I think there might be a few out there that take some of those people. I don't know for sure. Nobody does, I guess. But I know David a long time ago. I've interviewed him many times, and I have a lot of his books. And recently, I looked at the site. I was like, I can't keep up with all these damn books. There's a bunch I don't have. I'm like, forget it. I ain't buying them. There's too many. But yeah. I have a bunch. But one time we were writing these written questions, and I asked about an examiner a long time ago, and I asked about Bigfoot, and then he wrote me privately, Jeffrey, I can't answer that. I can't bring that up to the people, the families, and he wouldn't answer it, and I'd admit it and stuff. So but he seemed to allude that he thought maybe that was a possibility. He couldn't tell the families or whatever. And that's not to say all Bigfoots do stuff to people like that. I don't want to be genocidal flavors about Bigfoot, but there's, like with any race or people, there's probably, bad apples or whatever. I've heard stories from Kiwani saying there was a rogue Bigfoot that hurt people and they put it in a cave and made it drink antifreeze or something weird to kill it like the tribe did. Who knows if that stuff's true? I don't know, but I know there's that weird Bigfoot story about the dude that got kidnapped, sort of, and he got away or something. That's an oldie.
Yeah, Alfred Ostman.
Yes.
Yeah, there's a... the one that I got the picture of the male Bigfoot in all his glory is actually kind of a Pakistani Sasquatch legend, and again the whole idea is that these Sasquatches or whatever they're called over there are on the lookout for humans that they can abduct for mating purposes. And then someone had sent me, actually, speaking of erotica, old Arkham comic that involves a suburban white man named White Man who is kidnapped by a family of Sasquatches because they have a young lady who needs a husband. And it goes pretty much as you would expect an Arkham comic on that way to go.
That sounds like something from Mr. Crumb,
Oh yeah. I was cracking up. But anyway, there seems to always be this idea. Oh, and then the other thing that cracked me up was I was on Reddit, and I was on like the science subreddit or something. I was not. If anyone's listening, I've had lupus this last year, and some days I don't have energy to do anything, so I'm dinking around on Reddit looking at stupid stuff to distract myself. And suddenly I get like way down in these comments, and these people are talking about finding porn in the woods. And this one guy says, I think that there is a that when you have porn in the woods, it's left there by the porn fairy, who I think is like a species of cryptid similar to Bigfoot. And this other person is like, I like to think of Bigfoot out there helping the porn fairy distribute porn for, in the woods for kids. I was dying. Because you know, everyone likes to talk about the paranormal aspects of Bigfoot and how they're, you know, they're kind of similar to the fairy and everything. I'm like, well, here we have the connection. It's the porn in the woods that's bringing them together.
I guess we're segueing into sex magic now, right?
Well, of course.
Yes, so.
Sasquatch, of course, is renowned for their abilities in sex magic, of course.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I remember weird places like that in the woods when I was a kid, and they were creepy, like weird
across
that stuff. scary. It's like there was some weird story where in Georgia, me and kids hung out at. You drove through, and it's supposed to have been haunted by Satanists, but they said waterheads lived there, and I'd always look for waterheads. Well, I hope that's not a derogatory term towards anyone, but that's what they said, and I never saw one, so I don't know exactly what they meant by that, but maybe like you. Deliverance stuff, I don't know, but that's what they called them. I never saw one.
Waterhead? Is that what you said?
Waterheads. Yes.
Do you know what they meant by that? Because I've never heard that term.
Not really.
I thought it meant like a bulbous head.
Like a person with like a bulbous head.
Like hydrocephalic? Like a melon head?
Like a melon head. Like for those people from Star Trek.
Okay. Oh, I see. Okay. It's a slang term that refers to several things, but it can be a slang term that refers to people that are that have big heads as a result of incest, you know, and breeding and inbreeding.
Okay.
And the Urban Dictionary says original slang for someone who's hydrocephalic. Does that mean big head or whatever? Now come to refer to a severe idiot or retarded individual. So it's not very nice either. So
yeah.
But I remember that in high school.
Well, that's weird because that's kind of like a recurring kind of urban or suburban legend. Is that there was like the mad scientist doctor who was in charge of the mental hospital and then created these melon heads, like all these, you know, hydrocephalic types that like are living in these weird areas. There's a road here in Napa called the Partrick Road. It has a cemetery on there, Partrick Cemetery, like a kind of an old, smaller cemetery. But it has that same legend where you're supposed to have these kind of melon heads or hydrocephalic people out there, and also something called the Rebobs, which are like these bat-winged monkeys.
Wizard of Oz.
Well, exactly. Yeah, you can see how it's kind of like these kind of
that sort of thing.
Yeah, these kind of two urban legends that kind of latched onto one another and stuff. But the interesting thing is actually down that road and in a couple of the cemeteries in that along that area, that side of the valley, there are a number of people that have seen like spook lights. So. It's kind of like the weird urban legend thing, which is pretty obviously, you know, just a kind of stuff that's been picked up from other places. But then you have these reports of these lights too. So I think that the actual real phenomenon tends to kind of keep the corny urban legends going, maybe.
Yeah, bat wing monkeys and deliverance people.
Yeah.
That Aggie Noss guy said I was telling some of my UFO stuff. He thinks I should get hypnotized. That would creep me out because I'd have to be very trustworthy of whoever hypnotized me. But there have been some UFO stuff with me that makes you wonder if more happened that I just don't know. Or maybe it didn't. I don't really know. But I've had some weird ones at treetop level, and it makes me wonder, did they do more and I don't just remember it? Like there is one that I've talked about this big when I was in Florida. I'm still in Florida, but I was in Lynn Haven walking down the road. And I may have had a Siberian Husky with me at that time. But this big orange rusty Milky ball floated over the treetops, and I swear there was nothing connected to it. It wasn't like something carrying it. It wasn't like, it was just an orange, crazy looking, rusty, weird ball floating through the sky. And I swear it looked like it weighed tons and tons and tons. Like it could have been in water. It came out. I think it was a UFO. I just wonder what was in it. But then you start wondering, well, did they do something to me that I don't remember? And you don't really know, but I don't know if I trust hypnotism. I don't know how I feel about it, really. I know there's all kinds of weird stories with Emma Woods and stuff that makes you not trust it more, but I don't know if I would trust. I don't even know if I could be hypnotized. I guess anyone can. I don't know.
I think it depends. If different people have different kind of talents or capabilities for how hypnotizable they are. So some people are very easily hypnotizable and go into deep trance. But then, you know, other people, it just really doesn't kind of work. So a lot of it has to do with that. And then, like you're saying, you want someone that you can trust who's not going to be asking you a bunch of leading questions or, you know, trying to get you freaked out or, you know, trying to impose their own scenarios on you. And like you say, it's different because you're going to be in a state of consciousness that you're naive to, right? The good thing about if you're meditating on your own or doing yoga or doing those type of practices on your own is that you can build up your own capacity for accessing these altered states of consciousness on your own. And it is possible to develop the ability to remember more, like in waking consciousness, develop the ability to remember your dreams better, right? Yes. And so these type of things can help you on your own to kind of, if there is something there, to help it emerge more naturally and more, you know, with less worry about it being influenced by what other people are doing about your process. I think it's like a slower process, but I found over the years, I've never seen a UFO. I did have a missing time encounter with a gnome. And I have no idea what happened then. But for whatever reason, it doesn't bother me. So I don't know. I just have no idea what happened at that time. But I can understand how it would bother people. But the other thing is that when I've had times when I have started meditating or studying with a different person that I have an intense connection with or a discarnate entity, and suddenly you'll be going into these very altered, you know, for me, states of consciousness that I'm unfamiliar with, and I'll have a hard time, you know, it's like I'll black out, and then you'll come to. But then as I get more familiar with that state of consciousness, then what I had not been able to remember before becomes more available to me as I become more familiar with that particular state of consciousness. So I think it is really possible for people to develop these capacities on their own. If you just have, you know, a little bit more of a daily practice, it takes longer and it's not dramatic, but I think that you can trust the process a little more. And also it's helpful if you're going forward into more odd or high strange experiences, because you'll have developed your capacity to keep your conscious awareness going through these various weird states of consciousness.
I know once during DMT, I thought I was laying on a table with grays around me, but it was like in my mind's eye, and I was like, is that something that happened to me, or is that something that's happening right now? What the hell? That's the only time I've really... Well, I did have something not too long ago happen that was pretty interesting, and don't you do it, pig. Starting up. But anyway, it's that thing, man, it's annoying, but sweet, annoyingly sweet. But anyway, I've had weird experiences with the sun to where I can close my eyes and let the white light fill me. And I was at a gym not too long ago, and I did that. The sun was coming in, and I stared at it. Then I looked. Everyone in the room had like an orange orb over them. I mean, or pinkish orb. It was like, I don't know if it was a spirit or what, but it was really strange, like a weird experience. And it's like the sun is giving me a gift somehow, and there's a connection, I think, to our soul and the sun, the light and everything. But anyway, I was looking at the skylight, let the white light fill my body, And then I looked through the house and I looked into the grandmother's room, who's going through hospice right now, who's, you know, 90, 91. I saw a tall, slender being that looked like a gray, but it was like energy. It was like an astral projection, and it moved, and it was like surprised that it saw me. And it was like somehow the sun showed it to me, just the way the light. It was almost like you'd see a sunspot from a camera flash, but it was shaped like a tall, weird being. I don't know what it was, but it was weird. And I don't know if it was there, that something parasitical or helping or whatever, but that was one of my weirder experiences. But it was definitely weird. It was like you could see the head and the eyes, and it was kind of like, but it was kind of like a hologram, but pink, like the way you would see from when you look at the sun and then look different and you see weird energy and stuff. It could just be effects, but it seemed like there was something to it. Christina said she saw it over the bed once and thought it was trying to get me or energy or something weird. I don't know, but it was definitely strange. But I haven't seen grays that much except for that seemed like a gray, and then that DMT experience. Other than that, I ain't never seen one to my knowledge. Mm-hmm.
It's weird you talk about seeing things in your mind's eye, and like, are they astral, are they physical, or what? Because I was on this the Rigorous Intuition Forum for a number of years, and there was a guy named Joe Hilshoit. He was Australian, and I wish that I had kept this someplace, because that forum is just like huge. I have no idea how I could find this. But he spoke about, and this is probably like maybe the better part of 15 years ago, an experience that he had had. He had been at home in bed. It was at night, he was asleep. And if I recall correctly, he was woken up and he felt like there was a kind of a presence that was up in the corner of the room that was inimical to him, and that was trying to get his soul out of his body. So he said it was like an alien abduction experience on this kind of visceral energetic level, because they had like this struggle for, I don't think, 10 or 15 minutes, and then it resolved. And he was not abducted. But it's like this, the whole idea that you could be like abducted. That was the first time I'd encountered that idea, that you could be like have like an alien abduction or some type of abduction like that, but it would be on like the soul or the astral level,
right?
As opposed to just, you know, people getting grabbed physically. There's also a lady, Lucretia Hart, who writes the blog at Spiral's End, I think. And she's had a number of experiences with aliens and weird discarnate, incarnate beings. What's interesting to me is that she's a practicing esotericist, and she's very familiar with being able to astrally project, being able to travel out of the body, various trance and meditative states. And she's very clear that there are times when she is like abducted astrally, or meets them in like the astral realm or in a lucid dream. But then there's other times she's like, yeah, they just came up, they knocked on the front door, and, you know, they took us out the back of the house, and we got on a physical craft. Which is interesting to me that she draws that distinction, because she is so familiar with these other states of consciousness and ways of interacting with other beings, you know, astrally or in lucid dreaming, trance states, and all this type of stuff. So I don't know.
What is her name?
Lucretia Hart. And her is...
What's her name again?
Lucretia Hart.
Lucretia. Oh. Is that H-A-R-T?
Yes.
Because I think I've seen her stuff. I think I've seen her stuff.
You know,
what's interesting about some of her, and what you were talking about, is it reminds me of one experience I had, and just one. I've never had an experience like this before or since. But it occurred when I spent the night at a friend of mine's house that was undergoing a kind of a haunting. And some paranormal, you know, poltergeist experiences, really. In fact, it's the only time I've ever actually seen poltergeist experiences where you could actually see physical things like levitating and flinging themselves across the room or moving. I mean, I've never, you know, before or since, I've never seen anything like that. But I the first night I slept there, I woke up in the middle of the night. I was actually sleeping in the bed with a friend of mine. We were just both sharing this king-size bed. and she had taken, she had just had surgery, like on some ganglia or something on her arm. Mm-hmm. And so she had taken a bunch of painkillers. So she was out, you know, out. And I woke up and my back was to the wall. I was kind of on the inside of the bed. And it felt like, this sounds so weird, it felt like the wall was open, like there was an opening in the wall, and that there was this thing that was trying to get me. And it was like wrapped around me, and it was sort of like the Poltergeist movie. You know how in the Poltergeist movie there's this portal that opens up and it kind of tries to suck the people through this portal that's like in the closet? And that's kind of what it was trying to do. And it was like, there was like this personality with it. It was saying, we're going to get you through your fears. We're going to get you through your doubts. And it was like a predator. I can't even describe it really. And I fought it for hours. For hours. Because I was so scared of it. And finally, yeah. I got pissed off. Mm-hmm. And that seemed to help.
Yeah.
You know, because it was like, no, you are not going to. And it was trying to pull me out to the back of the middle of my back, like into wherever it was. And I just finally got, like I said, really pissed off. And I was like, you are not, you have no right to do this, you know. And so I got, and then I was able to sort of make it go away. And then it went away and I fell asleep. And I woke up the next morning and I went downstairs and I talked to my friend about it. I kind of revealed it to her. Mm-hmm. And she kind of hung her head. Mm-hmm. This is a friend of mine. She was my first spiritual teacher. She was, you know, like a very talented clairvoyant person, mm-hmm. psychic person, but with some flaws. She was also an alcoholic. So she tended to, you know, her life tended to be unmanageable in a lot of ways. But she said, you know, I'm really sorry because I meant to put up a protective thing in that room, but I forgot to do it last night. Because they were having problems in the house generally. Yeah. And that was her daughter's room, and her daughter had actually left that room, wasn't mm-hmm. sleeping in that room because of some other things that had happened there. But this thing tried to wrap itself around my neck. It tried to like strangle me. It was like for like hours. And it was this weird sexual energy,
mm-hmm.
you know, like it was trying to entice me. But I've never had anything like that happen before or since. Mm-hmm. And this was before I really knew a lot about this kind of stuff. So when I saw the movie Poltergeist, it completely freaked me out because it was like, oh my God, this is just like that. You know what I mean? Yeah. You know, just like that. You know, it was because even though my back was to it, it was kind of like I could sort of feel and see like what it was doing. It was like this portal, you know. And of course, my friend slept through the whole thing.
Yep. Well, it's kind of odd too, because you see that even though there was materialist explanation for your friend being passed out, right, on the pain pills after having surgery, you see this happens a lot with people that are experiencing alien, like the bedroom abductions and stuff. But let's say, you know, my partner is just kind of like turned off or just like crashed out there and I can't wake him up, right?
Right, exactly. So similar. And she was like, oh, I didn't experience anything. It was like, well, good for you. You know, like I didn't sleep in that room the next night. I slept in the living room where all the poltergeist activity was happening.
Oh, God, that's crazy.
I would rather sleep there than sleep in that room, you know?
That's awful. It's weird because I think Jeremy Vaney had talked about like kind of like the whole portal opening up in the wall. He's had some type of experience, and I think David Huggins too, the guy who had the ongoing relationship with the lady alien, he makes those paintings.
I've had the guy on that made that.
Yeah.
I really like that guy's stuff, actually. I think he's really interesting.
He has such a wonderful attitude. He seems like a really nice guy, and his paintings are banging, and he has a really great attitude about it. He's just not afraid to say that there's things that he doesn't know and just kind of tells what's happening. But I think he's had the similar thing too, where it'll feel like the wall's opening up and his lady friend will come through sometimes. So
he's bopping uglies with aliens from the pictures I've seen. I have a book that's filled with stuff like that, weird stuff.
And there's
alien boobies.
And there's a Bigfoot gnome Littlefoot angle, I guess, to this whole thing, which is, I think this one thing, I was, what was I doing? I forget what I was doing. Anyway, I was online, and Ben Jaffe had, I'd posted a picture of a meditating Bigfoot. Ben Jaffe was saying something about, I guess that in one of David Huggins' paintings where he's being ravished by his lady friend there, and there's like a forest behind them. And in the forest, there's like a little, it looks kind of like an Ewok or something, like a mini Bigfoot. He's like glowing red eyes, yeah?
Yes.
So it's like, again, there's the whole thing of like, you know, that these Bigfoots somehow involved in this weird sex magical ritual with these demi-physical entities or something. But Ben Jaffe was saying that there is a similar strain, I hope I don't misspeak, in a certain Tibetan sexual magic initiations that happen through, as they call it, the guru yeti, right? So like the yeti guru is going to give you this initiation into certain sexual tantric practices. There he is right there in David Huggins' painting. So maybe he's been involved with the Dakini this whole time. I don't know.
Well, it's, you know, my experience with like discarnate sex, I mean, mm-hmm. you're more of an expert of it.
Oh my God.
than I am, because you studied it. I mean, you've like studied the like background of it, you know. I haven't studied the background of it. But I've had some experiences, you know. I mean, I have my experiences have told me that there's a lot of sex going on.
Well, I mean, when you think about it, I mean, how many billions of people are there in the world, right?
Well, you know, I can't remember who wrote the story. I want to say that it's Harlan Ellison, but I don't know for sure who wrote the story. But he wrote that somebody, it was either Harlan Ellison, maybe Heinlein wrote this. I don't know. But it's a short story about how people... there are a bunch of people in the world that become aware of the fact that there are lots of people that are having sex with each other on another plane, and all of the sex is illicit. You know, it's like with your mother, with your brother, with your neighbor, you know, and it's like, but there's only so many people that are familiar, that are aware of this, you know.
It's like a secret initiation into it.
Yeah, so these people that are aware of it, they begin to try to like form it and control it, you know what I mean, in various ways. But the truth is that it's sort of like an examination of secret desires is what it really is, you know, so that, you know, there are lots of secret desires that people have that they don't really want to. You know, you may have it in your head, but you don't even really want it to come out. You don't even want it to be manifest, really, because of what that would mean, you know, what that would do. You know,
just
like
I'm thinking about it.
Yeah. I mean, it's the idea that we all have these fantasies, you know, mm-hmm. but in fact, we really wouldn't want them to happen. And if they were, you know, if a circumstance were to occur like that, we probably wouldn't react like that. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, somebody asked me the other day, like, what are your fantasies? Well, my fantasies are probably kind of bland, you know, compared to some people. but they usually involve strangers, you know. And I can tell you for a fact that I would never do that in real life. because I can't trust strangers in this world like I can in my own head.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, it's one thing to imagine something. It's a very different thing to act it out in the real world. So, I mean, that's just, you know, I mean, it's fun to think about all type of crazy stuff that you'd never want to actually do. That's a funny thing. I was going to say something, now I forgot exactly what it was. Oh, but I think a part of it just goes down to, you know, just like the mass amounts of sex. I mean, it is true, because if you look at, you know, what's happening, you know, not just people, but, you know, in the world, animals, plants, and so on, right? They're all reproducing sexually. And, you know, a lot of it goes on, and it doesn't have to just be, you know, nice mother and father in between two particular species. I mean, there's like, you know, psychedelic squid orgies out there and manta ray orgies, and you have bats that are pollinating cactus flowers. I mean, it's just the whole idea behind sex is there needs to be a lot of it, and it needs to be involved with, like, how I want to say, multiple partners, multiple, you know, going across the classes of creatures and everything. So I think that, you know, that's just kind of the nature of sex, is that it's just this constant upwelling of, well, how about if we tried this? How about if this happened? How it's like really the source of creativity.
His range is.
Look.
Have y'all ever seen Fantastic Planet, this old cartoon that's French and kind of weird about aliens and weird stuff? It's really old, but it's neat, though. If you ever get a chance, look it up. It's called Fantastic Planet. It's a French cartoon that's weird as hell, and they do weird astral stuff and have sex maybe with these other aliens, but it's about them taking a little, these big blue people, they take a little human and keep it as a pet, but it's bizarre. It's the bizarrest thing you could ever, it's based on a book, and I wish I could find the book, but it's not available in French. But it's a really good cartoon.
Bizarre. It's French.
It's French. But is range is? That's my question.
Animals, sex, it's bizarre, it's French.
But it's these big blue aliens, and it's the weirdest thing.
I think that this has been the funnest episode we've ever had.
Fun, except for the Rosanna part. That was not good.
I know, like, that's a big one.
I know, I felt bad.
Maybe you can get her on another time, maybe.
Yeah, maybe we can figure it out. Get her on, hopefully, for sure. Mm-hmm. But
it's too bad she couldn't get on.
Yeah, I wanted her to come on for as a guest, but I don't know what to do with the StreamYard. I don't know. We'll have to figure it out. I don't know what's going on. Something weird. StreamYard's pretty good. It doesn't mess up that often, but it messed up with me last week, but that was really my fault. It was a mic update weird issue, so it's rare. But hopefully maybe we can figure it out. Maybe something just with our settings on Windows, you know, or something like that. Here's Return of the Pig again. How long do we have? 4 minutes? Do you have anything you want to plug, Stephanie? Any sites or anything?
Oh, she's so cute.
Oh, God. Is it a she or a he?
She.
Look at that face. Oh, my God. Look at that snoot right there. Look at that snoot on that face.
It looks like a hippo.
I'm taking some screen prints to show my mom. She loves a little pig. Oh, God, what a cutie. Oh, I'm glad you're kissing her.
Nice kisses. Hi, cutie.
Oh,
famous cow pig. Famous.
Hi. She has a little heart on her nose.
The babe.
Oh, God, she's flaring her nostrils.
She's looking at the camera. That's so great.
I hope this is a mini pig that's got 1,000 pounds. You have to be very careful how you feed these things, or you'll have a giant pig in your house. There you go.
So does she go in a box? What does she do?
There's like this gate that's for dogs, like a fence you put up, and there's like blankets, a litter box, and a little box for her to hang out. She loves to just run around. She'll just go fast. Like, my God.
Oh, but yeah,
when she gets bigger, I don't know what the hell we're going to do, but hopefully she's trying to be careful of your food. The thing was $100 on the side of the road from this farmer, but she's a mini pig because she looks very little compared to a big, you know, I've seen regular pigs and she's little, but I know she's going to get bigger, but hopefully not too much bigger. I know she'll
stay on her good side.
Like a large dog. Like a large dog. She likes kisses.
Oh, look at that.
That's a cute
Elvira.
Oh.
Elvira, my heart's on fire.
Gosh, she's so cute. I keep trying to look around the edge of your screen there so I could see her better. Because obviously I know how this works.
She is a cuteness. Sometimes I call her Honey Baked Ham. That's not good.
That would be sad.
There's a thought that someone would do that. Sad. It makes me sad for all pigs.
Yeah.
I have to give up bacon.
Well, see, you know, whenever the only animals that I've ever been able to like, eat after I've met them are lambs and chickens. and for some reason, I don't know why, but I'm able to still eat them. It's very strange. Octopuses, once I met an octopus, I couldn't eat another one.
Yeah.
I don't know. What
chickens are horrible. They'll kill each other and cannibalize each other and just bully each other. They could be really, really nasty. So I think some people, well, I know my husband, Anthony, we always felt terrible about eating chickens until my mom had some chickens and they were just awful to each other.
He's they're basically reptiles.
Yep,
with feathers. Smarter reptiles is what they are.
Yeah, well, so after that, he's like, forget it, I'm eating chicken, I don't care anymore.
I don't do Chick-fil-A. They don't have it here, but they have a Burger King chicken sandwich. It's really good.
Well, I don't do fast food chicken, but I will go to the store and get good chicken and eat that chicken.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. We got a minute left. Next week is Eric Grimsman, Nostradamus situation. How are you on that one, Wham? Are you going to be there or what? You don't know yet?
What my goal is over the next few days, if everything goes the way I want it to go, considering what a nightmare today was, I'm hoping to be able to tune in either via my hotspot on my phone or through my phone. One of the two. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yeah, that sounds good. Let me know if anything changes. I muted my mic because of loud bulldog. Sometimes they're loud. That's the biggest thing with a pig. That squeal can get on your nerves after a while, and it starts doing it for more food when it just ate a lot of food. Like, you know, and then it found dog food. Now it loves dog food. So they're not really supposed to eat that, I don't think so. But it has dog food on its mind. It looks for it, and you got to hide it. It wants the dog food. We found it in the dog food dish.
The carbs.
We found it in the dog food dish, swimming and eating in the food.
Yeah. That was a high point of her experience there. Yep.
Yeah. All right. All right, everybody. Thanks for a great show and appreciate it. Stephanie, you had a good time.
Oh, yay. I loved it. Hi, Rosanna.
Bye, Rosanna.
Bye-bye.
Okay. We need to fix StreamYard. All right. Yeah, it's her. It's computer thing. I bet it's settings, Windows or something. All right, everybody. Have a good weekend. Good night, everybody.
All right, everybody. It's time to vote. Get out there and nominate your favorite podcasts. The People's Choice Podcast Awards voting is up on the 31st of July. So go to podcastawards.com to nominate the following shows. Writers and Illustrators of the Future podcast in the categories of education and also storyteller drama. The Centralist in the category of politics and news. That's with show host Joe Montaldo. Science and Beyond in the category of science and medicine. Also with show host Joe Montaldo. The Outer Realm in the category of society culture with show hosts Michelle DeRoche and Amelia Pisano. And the Pittsburgh Paranormal Chasing Prophecy in the category of religion and spirituality. There's another category that opened up for us recently, the People's Choice, so please select for this category as well. Go to podcastawards.com to vote for these five shows and any others you enjoy listening to. That's podcastawards.com. And remember, voting ends July 31st, so go ahead and get your votes in.